नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Text 29 from Canto 3, Chapter 31. The movements of the living entities.
Saha dehe na manena.
Saha dehe na manena.
Pardamanena manyuna.
Pardamanena manyuna.
Karoti vigraham kami.
Karoti vigraham kami.
Kamishvantaya chatmanaha.
Kamishvantaya
Saha dehena manas manena.
Saha dehena manena.
Vardhamanena manyuna.
Vardhamanena manyuna.
Karoti vigraham kami.
Karoti vigraham kami.
Kamishvantaya chatmanaha.
Kamishvantaya chatmanaha.
Saha. With. Dehena.
Dehena.
The body.
Manena.
With false prestige.
Vardhamanena.
Increasing.
Manyuna.
On account of anger.
Karoti.
He creates.
Vigraham.
Enmity.
Kami.
The lusty person.
Kamishu.
Towards other lusty people.
Antaya.
For destruction.
Cha.
And.
Atmanaha.
Of his soul. Not a pretty picture. With the growth of the body, the living entity, in order to vanquish his soul, increases his false prestige and anger, and thereby creates enmity towards similarly lusty people. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter, verse 36, Arjuna inquired from Krishna about the cause of a living being's lust. It is said that a living entity is eternal, and as such, qualitatively, one with the Supreme Lord. Then what is the reason he falls prey to the material and commits so many sinful activities by the influence of the material energy? In reply to this question, Lord Krishna said that it is lust which causes the living entity to glide down from his exalted position to the abominable condition of material existence. This lust circumstantially changes into anger. Both lust and anger stand on the platform of the mode of passion. Lust is actually the product of the mode of passion, and in the absence of satisfaction of lust, the same desire transforms into anger on the platform of ignorance. When ignorance covers the soul, it is the source of his degradation to the most abominable condition of hellish life. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. To raise oneself from hellish life to the highest position of spiritual understanding is to transform this lust into love of Krishna. Sri Narottam Das Thakur, the great acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya, said, Kama, Krishna, Kamarpane, karmarpane. Kama, Krishna, karmarpane. There's a colon after that. It's italicized. Due to our lust, we want many things for sense gratification, but the same lust can be transformed in a purified way so that, again, in italics, we want everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anger can also be utilized towards a person who is atheistic or who is envious of the Personality of Godhead. We have fallen into this material existence because of our lust and anger. The same two qualities can be utilized for the purpose of advancing in Krishna consciousness, and one can elevate himself again to his former pure spiritual position. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended that because in material existence we have so many objects of sense gratification which we need for the maintenance of the body, we should utilize all of them without attachment for the purpose of satisfying the senses of Krishna. That is actual renunciation. Saha dehena manena vardamanena manyuna karoti zigraham kami kami shvantaya chatmanaha. With the growth of the body, the living entity, in order to vanquish his soul, what a nice objective, increases his false prestige and anger, and thereby creates enmity towards similarly lusty people. Uma jnana timarandasya jnananjana salakaya chakshurin vilitam dina tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Ina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam. So the verse begins, Saha Dehena Manena. This is describing the unlike Prahlad Maharaj, who takes the living entity's journey all the way to the finish of the body, here Maitreya is just taking the living entity's journey up to the stage of youth, and then it's etc. And throughout, whether it's in the womb or out of the womb or baby body, child body, youth body, etc., there's principles that are at play. And saha dehena, in order to provide the living entity or reciprocate with the living entity's desire for independent enjoyment, which doesn't exist, an illusory situation is provided so he can try it. And with that, one needs a gross and subtle body. And so, saha dehena, with a body, and then comes manena, the mind. Can anybody very quickly recall from our scriptures where this term manena, something that we hear all the time, where is that? Yeah. What's the message? It's Shikshastakam 3 from Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari means offering all respects to others and oneself being freed from false prestige. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So that verse is spoken by Lord Chaitanya in answer or in response to his own doubt or message or the obstacle, like the obstacle that we were discussing yesterday, where we get some inspiration to chant, and we know what the glories of chanting the holy name are, but we don't have attraction. So what to do? We're in this material circumstance, we have knowledge, and there's a big gap between what we know and where we are. What to do? So his recommendation is the Shikshastakam 3. Become humble. Become free from false prestige. Offer all respects to others. Always be in a position of rendering service unto others. That's a nice notion, but how do you do it? There's a part of the package of material contamination is false ego. So a very simple description of what false ego is. From a scriptural point of view, is a misconception of self. I can remember very well, young person growing up, this word false ego was like, it meant, the implication was, somebody's really proud, somebody's puffed up, somebody's like a bully and swaggers around and mean. Boy, that guy's got a false ego. But it's far more insidious than just, you know, the bully. It's anyone who has a misconception of who we are. You know, nice people also have a misconception of who they are, if it's based upon the body. And we've all had the experience where what is looks like a little bit of the mode of goodness, that's a spiritual person, that's kind of what's out there in the marketplace today. There's a nice amount of selflessness. They think about the welfare of others, and that's a spiritual person. Our Vedic conception is different. It's a mode of goodness person, but the mode of goodness is also tinged with passion and ignorance, at least tinged, or a good wholesome amount of passion and ignorance and some amount of goodness. So what about the soul? What's the spiritual conception that's free from false ego? What's that humility that doesn't stop? It's not conditional. It's not circumstantial. It's foundational. What's that? And how do you get it? It's essential. Principle-wise, there's at least two essential things. One is that from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, one receives the spiritual conception. And Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, it means in disciplic succession. Otherwise, it ain't going to happen. Nice idea, platitudes that sound very pleasing, but it's not going to happen. I remember seeing a video of what's his name? A contemporary of Srila Prabhupada, who was the head of the Sikh religion at that time. What's his name? Very common, well-known personality. Huh? No. Sikh religion. No, that's the earlier, the contemporary of Srila Prabhupada. Yogi Bhajan, thank you. So Yogi, there's a video of Yogi Bhajan meeting with Prabhupada, and Yogi Bhajan moved his hand in the air like this and said, "Swamiji, you are very influential in this world, as am I. Let us bring everyone together, let's get together, love one another." And he was going like this, and Prabhupada said, "They will never." Meaning, as long as the platitude, the euphemism that says, "Very nice," it won't happen as long as there is the false ego, the bodily conception. And it's subtle. And it's very deeply rooted. Unless there's acceptance of this descending message. And the acceptance isn't. It goes beyond just agreement. Yes, I agree. And then we do something else. I like the topic yesterday where there's, you know, sustaining humility or sustaining a spiritual inspiration. Sustaining, living one's life according to the teachings that one hears and receives and agrees with. There's many things that were said, application and explaining, reminding, sharing with others, and that the acting within the relationship of that message, the message and the source of the message, ultimately in relationship with Krishna. The whole program is dependent to sustain that which one has received and let it grow in one's heart, is that shelter in Krishna. Otherwise, it won't sustain. Or without that spiritual conception of humility, spiritual conception meaning in relationship to Krishna, not just, okay, I accept, but acting in one's relationship with Krishna. And acting in one's relationship with Krishna, what does that mean? Devotional service. And in devotional service, I'm not at the center. That's a novel idea. Because, just think about it, how do we see the world? I'm the center. What I see, what I experience, what I feel, it's me, it's about me. What's that conception where it's about Krishna? That's a spiritual conception. I'm an experiencing individual, but Krishna is the center. And so when Krishna is the center, it's going down this purport here, it's objects with Krishna at the center. And I want to spend some time speaking about relationships, because that's also in the verse and discussed in the purport as well. But it's both. The the language of Rupa Goswami from the description of rasa, which comes from the language of the Vedas, where it deals with drama. In drama, the elements are put in place such that one is stimulated, spiritual drama, one is stimulated to awaken loving attraction, loving feelings towards God, toward Krishna or towards Ram or whatever the Leela is, whatever the portrayal is. Minus God, then it's of this world, you know, the classic Romeo, Juliet, or romance, or, you know, him and her, and or good and evil, and all of that stuff, you know, it says something so that you feel something. Why do people go to the movies? Because there's something that's just, as they say, silver screen. It's just images flickering on a screen, or now it's other technology, but it stimulates a feeling, and you're, you know, up to identify with the character. Like when I travel and just sitting there chanting, and kids are moving around, you know, they're just, you know, they're playing the role of what they see on the screen, you know, kick fighting and, you know, all kinds of things. Because they're just imitating that which that is their world of reality, and it's just a further dimension of illusion, or But where does that come from? That comes from Krishna. We've forgotten Krishna. So you have things that stimulate feelings that are completely apart from reality. It's just Maya dumping on the living entity. And then we feel all these feelings and do all these things, and, you know, in La La Land, in a place that has nothing to do with reality. It's just, it's Maya covers the living entity. And one of the essential ingredients, I was going to say, but the first one that the living entity gets, covering-wise, is false ego. It's the most subtle. It's the first thing to come. It's the last thing to go. And false ego says, I am something that I'm not. Not just, you know, I'm this body, but then I'm the mind, and I'm all these other feelings and desires and stuff. Even before bodies are created, this subtle, the elements are there. And then, because the living entity has a desire to enjoy independently from Krishna, forget Krishna. I just want to enjoy. The enjoying spirit isn't the problem. The forgetfulness Krishna is the problem. Krishna's at the center, not I'm at the center. That's love. I'm a conscious being, and Krishna is a supreme conscious being, and he's the object. If you don't have Krishna as the object, then you have stuff becomes the object. You love your stuff. Here's the purporting and last sentence. We have so many objects of sense gratification, Rupa Goswami's teaching, this material existence program. So many objects of sense gratification, which we need to maintain the body. We should use all of them without attachment for the purpose of satisfying the senses of Krishna. So the objects aren't the problem. It's our disposition towards the objects. And our disposition towards the objects has everything to do with our disposition towards Krishna. Forgetfulness of Krishna. And that forgetfulness of Krishna comes because we want a dependent enjoyment, which doesn't exist. So we are recovered by illusion. And then we go chasing after objects. And then there's relationships, which is mentioned in the purport here, or the verse as well. And the material program is laid out very nicely, very clearly. I want to enjoy independently. So that's the mode of passion. And in that mode of passion, a product of that mode of passion is lust. And lust doesn't just mean, you know, man-woman kind of lust. It's being the enjoyer of objects. Lust. And then the byproduct, or as Prabhupada is saying here, circumstantially changing from lust comes anger, because my expectation of happiness didn't happen. It didn't come out right. Something happened, but it didn't come out the way I, as the enjoyer, wanted it to come out. And so I become angry. So Prabhupada's statement is, both lust and anger stand on the same platform, the mode of passion. But then this mode of ignorance is a further transformation. It starts with passion, and then it just becomes degraded into anger. So let's go back, do a rewind. What's the alternative to lust and anger, or passion and ignorance? So religion is commonly taken as goodness. You cultivate goodness. You do good things. And you don't do the bad things. You control your mind. But Arjuna says to control the mind, very difficult. And why is it difficult? Because it's contact with the mode of passion. It doesn't want to stay. It wants to go. Go and enjoy. Enjoy, enjoy. I want to enjoy. The whole little nice illustration of this that I won't go through the whole story, but one little girl in one program, I was asking a group of kids who were sitting in the front purposefully, because there were new people that were supposed to come but didn't come because they always come late. So I was just speaking to the kids, and I asked the kids all in the front row, like 8-10 kids, new families with children that weren't so exposed to Krishna consciousness, I asked the following question. Supposing you're a spirit soul and you got this bright idea that said, let me enjoy independent of Krishna. And so you come into the material world. You get a body, you get a mind, you get the whole program so you can try to enjoy independently of Krishna. And as you're going along the path of life, it doesn't come out right. So you make adjustments and you try it a different way. It doesn't come out right. You keep making adjustments, and it's painful. It's unhappiness. There's some little perks that keep you going, but it's not what you want. So then you get another body and you try it again and just keep going after it. Keep going. At a certain point, it gets to be where this isn't the right program. And so you decide, I'm going to do a U-turn and go back to Krishna. But it's not so simple to just do a U-turn and go back to Krishna. How come? That was the question. And the kids were all giggly, and I said, no, you got to raise your hand. You got to raise your hand. What's the answer? And, you know, they became quiet again. Then one girl in the front raised her hand and said, the soul is saying yes, but the censors are saying, I want to enjoy. Wow. A 4-year-old girl. And then another boy further in the back raised his hand and he said, and the mind says, I want to be independent. he was 6 or 7 years old. There's this, it's the mode of passion. It's impelling the living entity, the conditioned soul, into the make-believe that it can happen. And we bought into it, and once you buy into it, it's a very strong adhesive. You can't just pry it away and stay away, because there's this conditioning. It's very powerful. It's because we haven't given up the spirit of wanting to joy independently of God. What do you do? Change the channel. And then we can hear the message. We hear the message. And it goes in and says, yeah. And it doesn't stay. And next thing we know, it's off to the races again. The senses and the mind, and joy and independence. That spirit, that's the mode of passion, that later transforms into wrath or anger. We need a relationship with, this is the role of sadhu sangha. This is Kapila Dev's teaching to Devahuti now. It's Sankhya is wonderful. Aside from the fact it's a little difficult to go through all of it, breaking down all the elements of creation, but the machine is really well built. It's better than a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce or a Maserati or whatever. It's such a machine. It's perfect. And once strapped in, it's hard to get out. Unless there's... This is what Kapila Dev's teaching to Devahuti is. If she's so elevated that she has as her son the personality of Godhead, she's up there. But she's feeling herself disqualified because of her attachment. Not having a family, but the attachment. Overwhelming attachment. So her mind is bewildered because her Karnava Muni has just gone back to the forest, and she's just left with her son. She knows that her son is the personality of Godhead. But she's feeling all these emotions and bewildered. So she's requesting, you've covered me with your energy. Please remove the covering. You can do it. I can't, on my own, I can't do it. So his solution immediately is association with sadhus. And in one sense, sadhus means the perfected souls. And in another sense, sadhus means a Vaishnava, like the Prabhu's all assembled here. Because there's something in the heart of that Vaishnava, the souls assembled here. And that is, principally, primarily, it's the desire to connect again with Krishna. Now, the distinction here is, a Vaishnava may not be perfected soul, and then there's the perfected souls. So ideally, associate with perfected souls. But how can we associate with those that are less than perfect souls, perfected souls, and get relief from our condition? And it's a very nice, simple solution. Serve them. Serve them with the understanding that they have in their hearts some attraction for Krishna. Amidst the imperfection, they have in their hearts some attraction for Krishna. And that is what I'm honoring. And let me do some service to that soul who has attraction for Krishna. It's service that's pleasing to Krishna. Because that mood of serving the Vaishnava is pleasing to Krishna. This is a loving relationship. that replaces the ones that are described in this verse. The lusty person having enmity and enviousness towards another lusty person. Because the lusty person means they're impelled by the mode of passion. Here's another one impelled by the mode of passion. And it's not just competition. It's more degraded than that. You know, our Western culture, which is now creeping all over the world, whatever they have a nice name for it, it thrives in competition. I mean, kids learn it in school, you know, from the time you start to wiggle, it's competition. And, you know, get one up on the other person, and then you get rewarded. Just keep competing. Mode of passion. It's good for the gross national product. Keeps the wheel turning. It keeps the wheel of birth and death. And the suffering of the living entities. And then they become, when it's not satisfied, they become violent. Whoa, we don't want the violent part. We just want the competition part. But it's not going to happen. It's not the design. Not the machine. If the message is, don't do it. Whoa. What do? Go out of existence? That's not an option. Just be good instead of, you know, how do I sustain that? What do? You get back into the program. Compete and mode of passion and try to enjoy and prosper and get things and be successful and then die. Scratching your head wondering, I'm sure there was something more to it than this, but I don't know what happened. In Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that back up. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasized very strongly that Lord Chaitanya taught that Lord Chaitanya appeared after each of the four Sampradaya Acharyas appeared. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, and Nimbarkacharya, to unify the four sampradayas through his teachings and through his message and through his gift to the world. And even specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that Lord Chaitanya accepted, not that he made khichdi or something, but he accepted two principal teachings as essential teachings within his own teachings. And from Ramanujacharya, the two essential teachings are very familiar to all of us. One of them is bhakti that's unmixed with karma and gyan. Bhakti is pure. It's without fruitive desire or speculative knowledge, acquiring knowledge by speculation. Bhakti is free from those. It's pure. It's right there in Rupa Goswami's foundational teaching. Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam. Lord Chaitanya adopted that. And another is service to the Vaishnavas. Why? Because it's pleasing to Krishna. And it, from the heart of a devotee who's in this not perfected stage yet, that doesn't want things to just seep through your fingers, although they're very wonderful and inspirational, how do you retain them? Act in such a way to please Krishna. And this is something that's very pleasing to Krishna. In the Bhagavatam, there's repeated mention of protection of the cows and the brahmanas, a respect to the cows and the brahmanas. And the Vaishnava culture, a perfected brahmana, is a Vaishnava. At least on the platform of accepting the personality of Godhead Vishnu as the object. Because otherwise, a brahmana may have impersonal Brahman and as the object and still be struggling with the false ego conception that I'm a brahmana. We discussed that a little bit yesterday of those that are born in the brahmana family, they have the right kind of skin and they just discriminate pridefully, manena, discriminate pridefully about their group that doesn't, in contrast to the other group that doesn't have the right kind of skin or embodiment. It's a misconception, spiritually misconception, based upon pride, based upon passion, and thus prideful, lust and anger, and prideful. It's destructive. It's not spiritual. Although there's certainly some qualification that must be there even to take that birth, but mistaken and therefore hurtful to their own spiritual well-being. What to speak of the duty of the brahmana to give spiritual knowledge to others. That's service. So a Vaishnava is one who carries that conception, and we serve those persons who carry that conception and are trying to grow it in their lives. And it's just fundamentally, there's respect for all living entities. What to speak of respect for a Vaishnava, and how do you exhibit respect? You render service. And that rendering of service is the loving exchange is with Krishna. And there's some other person who's also Krishna's part and parcel, and interacting with them properly, it's pleasing to Krishna, and therefore the relationship becomes pleasing. Because it's pleasing to Krishna. And that's what loving exchange is. So, it's a major, essential part of getting out of this unsteady program, the sine curve program, the up and down, and, you know, it comes in, the signal comes in, and then it fades out, and the signal comes in, and it fades out, and I'm enthusiastic, and then I'm, you know, what happened? I forgot everything. Whoa, I forgot everything. And you're sitting chanting, and the mind's not steady, and all of those things. An essential part is the service to the Vaishnava, Vaishnavas. And then when you're serving a Vaishnava, supposing they're not perfect, just imagine they're not perfect. Okay, now what do? You serve them. Why? It's pleasing to Krishna. Why? Because in their heart is some fundamental attraction to Krishna amongst all the living entities that are also Krishna's parts and parcels. Here are those that, not just some vague idea of God, but Krishna. And have become attracted to Krishna. And are, to greater or lesser degrees, are cultivating their attraction to Krishna. My respect goes to that. So let me serve them. And staying mindful of that because it's pleasing to Krishna. That's a loving relationship. And we need sadhus to help us. This is Kapila's teaching, and it's Bhagavatam teaching. And it's Prabhupada's teaching. It's our Vedic way of life. Nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Nice verse. But so nashta means destroyed. Abhadra means unwanted things. Inauspicious things. Bhadra and abhadra. Auspicious, inauspicious. Those things that we don't want in our heart. Nashta. Then this word in between is prayeshu. Prayeshu means almost to nil. Like prayena, prayushakya, byakala, vasman, yugejana. in this age of Kali, the good qualities of people are almost destroyed to nil. So, nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. There it is. Sevaya means service. And bhagavata has, Prabhupada explains, two meanings, the book and the person. The person speaks the book, and the book speaks about the person. It's a loving relationship. And nityam means, very modestly, regularly. But nitya we know means eternally. It's like nonstop. That's what souls who are on the path to Krishna do. They hear the Bhagavatam and they serve the devotees who are absorbed in the message of Bhagavatam. We serve them. We don't do this other thing. Fault find and nitpick and make criticism and offend. Something, just little anecdotal something. When I was a teenager, I remember very well the stage of noticing, wow, teenagers are really good at finding faults, especially in adults, the older generation. This is wrong, that's bad. Just ask any teenager, they can give you the whole rundown of, you know, the older generation is garbage. When we were in college, there was this saying, don't trust anybody over 35. But the realization was, okay, it's one thing to recognize where the problems are, but where's that person that has the solution to the problems? I want to know that. I want to meet that person. What's the solution? This place is fraught with shortcomings and difficulties and limitations and bad qualities and faults and impurity. It's Kali Yuga. So you can, you know, spend your whole life finding out what's wrong. But what's the solution? What's to make things better? The Bhagavatam provides it. Not only what's wrong, but what's the root of why it's wrong, and address it. And this principle of loving relationships, serving those who are carrying attraction for Krishna. And that's a relationship because it's in relationship with Krishna. It's enduring. As I said yesterday, both enduring and endearing make you dear to Krishna. Especially if you're doing it because it's pleasing to Krishna. He knows your consciousness. So, you know, it's not just I want friendship or I want to be accepted or I want to be a good person or something like that. Relationship with Krishna. Relationship with sadhus who are giving that message. It's pleasing to them. And that carries one to the position of loving Krishna if you see Krishna is too far away. I need my binoculars. I can't even see him. So then those that are very close to you, not as distant as it might seem that Krishna is, those persons are representatives of Krishna. Or like we were discussing, what it means to be an instrument of Krishna. That's what it means. Krishna's instrument. In Krishna's hand, he's moving the instrument. And we go whatever way Krishna wants us to go. That's our happiness. And this is the way that Krishna wants us to go. Serving the devotees, having loving relationships with devotees. Yes, there's obstacles. Yes, it's not easy. But the more difficult part is in our own heart rather than the other person. Because if we're in the mood of service, we just serve to whatever our capacity is. Whatever that is, we serve Krishna. And that's clears at least it's a path, a genuine, bona fide, the real deal path of finding the solution to this mess that's being described here. On the platform of the mode of passion comes desires and lust, and unfulfilled lust transforms into anger and enmity between people. It goes on. It doesn't only go on out there, it goes on with our own little impurities, or not so little impurities. It goes on. And our service, part of our purification, is to not just cave into that conditioning tendency and take the other program, the program that the Bhagavatas are giving us. And you cultivate in a relationship of loving exchange with sadhus and Krishna. Go down that path. And it's nurtured by, and there's some taste involved in all of this. It's much nicer. And with that taste, you continue to hear and chant and apply and cultivate in relationship with those persons that are guiding us. And that's Krishna's arrangement too. It's part of a loving relationship with Krishna. He provides so many qualified people that if our regard for them is right, then Krishna gives that empowerment to them and we get purified. And together we make progress towards Krishna, towards our eternal situation. That's the solution. There's a phrase that I was reading, also in this third canto, where it's describing that on the advanced platform, or as one progresses in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada uses very profound words. He says, the whole universe is seen by such a soul as a facility for devotional service. And that's the platform of renunciation. It's devotional service. The objects and the people. It's an opportunity to be in a relationship with Krishna. And whatever our position may be, here or there or wherever, the opportunity for devotional service. I accept, due to my past free will choices, I'm in the situation that I'm in now. But that's not who I am. It's a situation that I'm in now. And it may have everything has its pluses and minuses, advantages and disadvantages. Let me act within that position, whatever it is, and take this message and in the relationship with those that are guiding me in my spiritual life, act in service to Krishna. It's the path. It's the elevator out of this material existence, the contaminations of the three modes of nature and the bondage that comes to us when we are identifying with them through our good friend, the false ego. The Kapiladeva teaches to Devahuti this process of bhakti is so powerful. And not only, it goes beyond bringing the mind to the position where it can be controlled. He says it dissolves the material mind. Yay! Because the material mind is there just as a facility for this other program. Try to be an enjoyer, and then you have to have material conception so you get a mind. And in the back seat, saying turn left, turn right, is the false ego. It dissolves the whole thing. Then, spiritual identity. You don't have to worry about what's my swarup. just engage in devotional service, humble devotional service for the instructions of the Bhagavatam, and hear the Bhagavatam message regularly and serve the Bhagavatas. That's the program. Very nice program. Very effective. Very powerful. Our resistance is strong, but it's still very powerful. Okay, I'll end there. See if there's any discussion. Yes?
I have a couple of doubts regarding loving relationships. So, we are having relationships with Vaishnavas because they're pleasing to Krishna, and our loving exchanges with Krishna that we're serving Vaishnava. So how to not make it impersonal? Because sometimes I feel when I'm at the receiving end of that loving relationship, you know, I wonder, does it even matter to you whether it's me or someone else, your relationship is with Krishna?
That's not impersonal. It spiritualizes the message is, it's not impersonal, but it spiritualizes our natural inclination for social interaction. In the spiritual world, there's social interaction. There's unlimited numbers of living entities. And we're engaged in loving exchanges with those unlimited. So here in this world, there is this same tendency. We're social beings. We want relationships. So what is it in the pure state? Those relationships that exist in the spiritual realm, they're not minus Krishna or somewhere Krishna's off in the corner, but the real thing is we have a relationship with another person. But it's because of love for Krishna that we're in the spiritual world, and that relationship with another person is filled with varieties of shared loving attraction for Krishna. You know, let's say Srimati Radharani and Mother Jasoda. Krishna is at the center of Mother Jasoda's life. Krishna is at the center of Radharani's life. Mother Jasoda hears Durvasa Muni gave Radharani a benediction that whatever cooking she makes, it never tastes the same each time she cooks, and whoever eats the cooking of Radharani will never become ill. So she went to Kirtida and said, Kirtida, can you have Radha come and cook for Krishna? Oh, that would be very nice. So Radha came every morning to cook for Krishna. All the exchanges are with Krishna at the center. It's not impersonal. It's with love. And Mother Jasoda loves Kirtida, and Kirtida loves Mother Jasoda, and Mother Jasoda loves Radharani, but Krishna's at the center, etc. But it's not impersonal. It's not, oh, you're expendable. You just happen to be part of Krishna, so okay, I'll have a loving relationship with you because it's pleasing to Krishna. They're not non-entities. They're entities. And there's love with Krishna at the center. It's another paradigm. It's not a material paradigm. What else?
And then making a personal relationship, but at the same time not being familiar. Because I have a very strong tendency to become familiar, especially in close relationships.
Well, then the antidote for familiarity is respect. So you can have a close relationship, at the same time have respect. A very simple way to think of this, because it's soon going to happen for you, is those who are not pujaris, they see the deity from a distance. And that distance helps create respect. And there should be respect. It's good. And then the pujaris have intimate contact with the deity. And supposing familiarity comes as a result of that intimate contact with the deity, problema. Mucho problema. So what to do? The brahmanas have to have brahmagyan. They have to have knowledge. And in that knowledge, their position is, I'm the servant. And this is the master. And by the mercy of, and it's done in a formal way, by the mercy of the spiritual master, I'm approaching the deity. There's the respect on behalf of the spiritual master, to assist the spiritual master. And there's mantras that say it. You approach the deity first by approaching the spiritual master and take his permission on his behalf to serve the deity, etc. And you touch the feet of the deity, and it can easily become mechanical, and thus familiarity, and thus offensive. So the brahmana knows that's a risk, that's a potential situation that can arise. But I want to serve, and so, you know, the protection is respect. So when I'm now back to everyday life, persons with whom I interact regularly, let me regard them with respect. And what is that respect? I mentioned it. In the heart, there's this attraction for Krishna. That's what I respect. Now, other living entities that don't have attraction for Krishna, I'm not going to have intimate dealings with them. Or the familiarity issue is not an issue. But I still respect them because they're part of Krishna. And I can serve them in a different way that I'm without the confidential dealing that I may do with a devotee. Dadati, pratigranati, goyamakati, prishtati, etc. I still may offer prasadam, but I'm not going to accept theirs. Whatever. Anyway. There was a Chinese couple in Northern Illinois University. We were going regularly to some program there. And he wanted to offer a gift just because he's a very cultured person. So the first time he offered a gift, it was chocolate. So I didn't say, oh, I can't accept that because it's chocolate. I didn't eat it, but I accepted it. Then I had to figure out what to do with it. But we may, you know, not just say, no, I can't, yeah, that's garbage. We don't do that. We don't want to hurt the person's feeling. But so how to have some kind of an exchange where there's nice dealings with one another. So I offered him a Bhagavad Gita. And I was expressing that I appreciate how cultured and refined he is. And we were speaking about music, so I said, could you have some traditional Chinese music? I bet it's very nice. So he got me a CD with traditional Chinese music. Exchange of love. But, you know, with Krishna at the center, at least that's how our consciousness should be. And, you know, it's not, oh, I got some nice Chinese music, or, oh, it's not, where's Krishna in this Chinese music? So it's just, it's the loving exchange. And similarly, when regarding someone with whom we interact regularly, what's the essence? It takes some refinement of consciousness in order to not become familiar. So you look to the essence of what's going on in this exchange. Yes?
What do you mean by becoming familiar?
There's a saying, familiarity breeds contempt. You've heard of that one. So familiar is, you get to know somebody and you spend some time with that somebody, and because you do, you come to know all about their weaknesses and their shortcomings. And then your attention goes to that. And out of familiarity starts in the mind And then comes in other forms, speech and behavior, and just even if you just vibe them, you know. Familiarity. So that's one of the things that happens in families, because there's not acceptance of another person's shortcomings, it's focus upon the shortcomings. And that's where the familiarity thing comes in. I lose respect for, here's a very wonderful part and parcel of Krishna living entity that has some shortcomings. I love them. And not just I accept the shortcomings, they can do whatever, but if I interact with them in relation to those shortcomings, it's with respect to their fundamental nature, and let me help them grow. That's a protection. So service is another protection for familiarity. But why would I serve someone? There's respect. It's not I don't respect them, I just care about what Krishna wants. There's respect for, it's a relationship. It's a real deal. It's a relationship. But Krishna's at the center, because that's reality. So that's what familiarity is. Yes?
One comment and question. You were speaking about this respect, and Srila Prabhupada, one time he was invited to take dinner with this one family in India, and his disciples went with them. At one point, everybody started looking at what they're eating, saying, you know, there's onions in there, and they started whispering. And Prabhupada even heard that. And you know, it looked like the host was getting a little disturbed. And Prabhupada said, bring me more of that subject, bring me more. So he wanted to, I understand he wanted to respect them and not embarrass them, so mm-hmm. they would feel some reciprocation with that.
Mm-hmm.
My question is that we're speaking, Rupa Goswami speaks about turning lust into love. It's as if lust is kind of like inherent in a conditioned soul, I mean, no matter, but if one's in the mode of goodness, is lust absent?
No. It's recessive. Mode of goodness is prominent, but recessive is ignorance and passion. It's there. The mode of goodness person also wants respect. And they don't get respect, and sometimes they get irritated. I've had experience. So it's there, not absent. And then sometimes the mode of passion predominates, and the mode of ignorance predominates, and then subsides. And depends upon the mix. And something else? Yes, right in front of you.
According to the statement which Ramya Prabhu just made, like, and I don't know the whole pastime where Prabhupada was asked.
I don't either. So, you want to know the whole pastime?
No, I want to know that.
What do I do in those circumstances?
Right.
You're not Prabhupada. There are other circumstances where Prabhupada acted in a different way. So it very much depends on the circumstance. I can tell you what the standard that Prabhupada observed, because I heard this directly from Hari Sori. There was a period of time when 3-4 times every day, day after day after day, there were programs in people's homes. And the standard question when people asked for a program was they had a certain set of questions. One was, are you vegetarian or non-vegetarian? And if the answer was non-vegetarian, then the statement was, then Prabhupada can come, but it's just milk and fruit. And if the answer was vegetarian, then there was another question that said, can you cook without onions and garlic? And if the answer was yes, then the next statement was, very good, we'd like to show you, go into the kitchen and show you how to make an offering. We'll make the offering and we'll show you how to do it. For most people, that was fine. But, you know, Swamiji is, because that was Prabhupada, but then Prabhupada instructed, this is for life membership, you know, brahmacharis, or devotees, prabhus, they were to observe a similar standard. Now, that's when you go, you're invited to attend a program. Now, supposing there's a relative, or something, somebody from work, and they invite you to come to their home for dinner. You know, there's a different kind of a protocol. And so much depends on the circumstance, rather than, you know, going through all the possible combinations. Your desire is to not offend the person, but you don't violate a standard. Somehow, depending upon the person and the circumstance, keep within the standards. A little delicate sometimes, especially with relatives, less so in the workplace, because relatives have their expectations, and then they may feel hurt or offended because you're discriminating against their eating habits. So it gets delicate sometimes. That's what you're referring to, right?
Yes, I have recent experience also. What I did was right or wrong. I mean, I stick to standard, but there was some
situation. I wouldn't give the advice, go ahead and, you know, violate standards. But rather let all other ways in which people expect you to be normal and, you know, beyond normal, just over the top with being polite and in a service mood and anticipating people's needs even before they ask and seeing that they're taken care of, and you go way over on the other side in that area, so that the thought is, wow, I don't know what you're into, but it's really good. And then part of what I'm into is, in this area, it's very important to me. And all this other area, you know, the 98% of everything else, you're this nice, affable, warm, considerate, you know, peachy cream person. Wow. When in the relative's situation. If they have a problem with the 2%, what can you do? Just, I'm not, you know, this is a personal matter for me. And you don't have to, don't blame it on Krishna. It's just, it's my personal matter. Because then they'll get mad at Krishna. You become a fanatic in other ways of saying the same thing. Yes?
This is a follow-up question of Prabhu's. So especially we come up,
this is a hot topic.
We end up with this kind of situations when you go to India.
Yeah.
Like, especially the relatives, as you said.
Sure.
So we usually ask them to cook vegetarian, and then next step is like without onion and garlic. And then sometimes they say they would like to offer, but not everybody. And also my question is, most of the relatives, they still check and eat meat. So they must be using the same utensils for cooked vegetarian too. So my question is like, usually I show some shy, sometimes I express it, and it's meditation in that case?
It depends on the circumstance. Depends on the circumstance. And it depends on how long you're going to be with those people too. Because you could say, oh, I'm not feeling so well, I'm only going to eat the salad and the fruit. I'm not feeling well. Depends on the circumstance.
So with the utensils, it's like...
Depends on the circumstance. I know what I did when I went to my family's home. Said, I need, you know, I'm going to get a new pot. And, you know, my mother didn't like that idea. But she didn't, because I was all these other nice things, and she, you know, she was okay. At least with the pot part. And utensils. And I did my own cooking, and she was okay. So, you know, that's when there's acceptance. But part of this, there are things that one can do to help gain acceptance. And there's some people that are just obstinate and whatever. And, you know, what can you do? What can you do? I would say if the situation is such that if it came to the idea of I want to have a separate pot to cook in and that's going to make a big explosion, then you ask Lord Chaitanya for forgiveness for the, you know, dealing with the circumstance, but still then you offer. That's not ideal. That's far from ideal. But other than this topic, any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, when the feelings are hurt, how do you still maintain the respect for Krishna? How do you overlook that and still maintain respect?
Well, what's the source of those hurt feelings? You don't need to answer. But it right away. But it's, you know, they did this, and I felt something. Now, is the problem over there, or is the problem over here? The behavior may not be, with speech or action, may not be ideal. But the hurt is something over here. So let me fix the something over here. And if I were more pure, maybe the behavior wouldn't even have happened. But I'm receiving something that's meant for my purification. Maybe I hurt another person. Or maybe Krishna wants me as an impetus to be just be transcendental. But in any case, I'm not going to carry this hurt. I'm going to look at where it came from. There's something inside me that needs attention. And then there may be, when that you enter into that space instead of the feeling hurt space, in that mood you may or may not, but you may wish to communicate with that person in the following way. Something like, the mood is, I'm taking responsibility for my feelings. You're not responsible for my feelings. I'm responsible for my feelings. So you let the person know, when such and such happened, this is what I felt. I don't know if you're aware of that, but... And then that person, not like I'm blaming you, but I'm letting you know, I'm just discussing in confidence something that happened. And leave the opportunity wide open for your perception of what happened may not be the same as their perception of what happened. Maybe they'll say, well, it was justified because. And that's okay, you know, if that's, you know, that's, they're responsible for their feelings and their behaviors. They may say, wow, you know, this is what I've intended to say or to do, and I'm really surprised. All kinds of things can happen. You allow whatever might happen to happen, and don't like feel another hurt because, oh, they didn't honor the fact that I felt hurt. But there's perhaps an opportunity created to share. Maybe they say, well, you know, what I was dealing with at that particular period of time, there was a ton of stuff on my head, and I really shouldn't have spoken or done what I did in the way that I did, but, you know, circumstantially, that's the way it came out, and I'm really sorry. Wow, I had no idea you were dealing with all that stuff. Really? Etc., etc., etc. So many things can happen. But in a mood of loving exchange, those things can be said if that's the mood. But the first step is address what's inside the heart that's causing the hurt. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.